So we're moving into item number six. Six.
Yep.
The 2018 legislative session proposals and operating budget requests. This is a briefing and possible decision, right? So I will wait with pregnant pause on possible. All right, so Nate and Owen, take.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioners, and Director Unsworth. So, yes, we're going to present the legislative and budget requests for the 2018 supplemental session. We'll start with Owen walking through the budget items, and then I'll cover some of the ledge proposals. Normally, of course, this would be delivered by Raquel Kosher, who's on a well-deserved vacation after a very long, long session.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioner Smith and Fish and Wildlife Commissioners. Again, Owen Rowe, Department Budget Director. Here today to give you a bit of a budget overview after we're coming out of the 17-19 budget building legislative session. Talk a little bit about what the supplemental guidelines are for a supplemental session. Yes, it's already again time to begin thinking about next session. So we'll be Nate and I will talk a little bit about the budget proposals that the department is working on for consideration next session by the legislature. So we're facing a pretty challenging budget environment. I'm sure we're not the only state agency in that regard. One of the big issues that we've been watching for quite a while has been the state wildlife account, and especially the non-restricted portion of the state wildlife account where we deposit general hunting and fishing licenses. And the costs or the expenditure authority provided in the budget continues to outpace the amount of revenue and fund balance we have to back those activities. I'll go into greater detail on that in just on the next couple of slides. As Nate and the director mentioned, the audit as well as the zero-based budgeting exercise is really an opportunity, which we're all embracing, to take a look at some efficiency and effectiveness options to improve agency operations. And I think also it's also an opportunity to help stakeholders and our customers become a little more aware of the challenges facing the department in budget and also in our conservation mandate. The legislature did recognize that we had a budget shortfall in this biennium, and they did provide us with some one-time general fund resources that will make a big difference in how we manage the 17-19 budget. But difficult decisions will need to be made about program reductions and agency priorities. So again, this is kind of a balance sheet for our non-restricted state wildlife account, again, where we deposit general hunting and fishing licenses. These dollars are used to support recreational hunting and fishing opportunities. The legislature provided the department about $85.3 million in spending authority from that portion of the account. Our projected available resources, our fund balance, and the projected available revenue is about 80.1. So you can see we're out of balance there. We're basically authorized to spend more than we're bringing in. And just like within your personal bank account, you can't do that for very long unless you have savings to spend. The variance there is $5.2 million. And then we also have to manage to at least a one-month working capital reserve. Generally, best practices are 2 months, but considering the budget shortfall and the direction from the legislature last year to manage the account a little bit more aggressively, we feel fairly comfortable in managing to a one-month working capital reserve. So that leaves us with a structural deficit of about $8.8 million this biennium is what we've projected.
Part of the spending authority, does the legislature expect a fund balance as well, or they just say spend this amount in the wildlife account?
Well, generally they appropriate a certain level to state agencies. In this case, they've overexpend our ability to spend, so we've actually got more resources than we have the ability to spend, so we continue to work with them. And they did recognize that in providing the department some additional general fund resources to help get us through the 17-19 biennium. Additionally, you know, it was a difficult year for the legislature to balance this budget, especially considering the McCleary decision on K-12 education spending. So there were some additional reductions to state agencies. The legislature reduced an additional $2.2 million along with the $10 million they provided the agency. That was an attempt, I believe, to balance the account. It is not quite nearly in balance, as you can see. And additionally, all state agencies took a management reduction, and about $300,000 of that hit the state wildlife account, non-restricted as well. So we're looking at a total kind of problem statement in the non-restricted state wildlife account of about $11.3 million. That's funding that programs had the ability to spend last biennium that will no longer be available this biennium in that particular fund source. So we take a look at the overall budget picture, and maybe the summary of budget deficits a little too strong of a term here. I'd probably characterize it a little bit more as a problem statement that we'll be working through in 17-19. Again, I'm just carrying forward that $11.3 million structural deficit that we've got in the state wildlife account. There were some additional general fund state and ALEA reductions that we'll also be needing to be making some decisions on. There was a reduction of wildlife population monitoring, a GFS reduction. That's an activity that we don't spend GFS on. So potentially the legislature had picked up on some of the other GFS in the wildlife program, potentially for maybe winter elk feeding or something like that. We were instructed to treat that as just a general cut to the agency and to try to figure out how to manage that. Also, there was a portion of the management reduction that hit our GFS appropriation as well. And again, we're not the only state agency that was faced with those management reductions. Last biennium, we developed a recreational commercial fee bill to maintain fishing opportunities and to increase them in some regards. I want to highlight a couple of our critical unfunded requests here. As you all know, our permit requirements through the federal government to be able to continue to maintain salmon hatchery production continue to increase. We've got a lot more monitoring and sampling requirements to maintain those permits. And so we're looking at about a $9.5 million problem statement there. We did receive some funding from the legislature for that. We've got some funding for the Mayer Brothers Hatchery, as well as the commercial fishing bill is going to bring some new revenue to the agency as well. IT security continues to be an issue of concern, not just for WDFW, but for a lot of state agencies. As you'll probably remember, our website was hacked last summer, I believe, and we've got some other concerns about the continued vulnerability of our IT systems. So, you know, consistent with what we've been messaging to the legislature last biennium, we've got close to a $24.5 million shortfall that we'll be looking to manage. The legislature did provide $10.1 million. It was actually $11 million in the budget, but $900,000 of that was to go to the regional fisheries enhancement groups. Those are 14 nonprofits across the state that are involved in salmon recovery and restoration work. And so we're looking at a problem statement of around $14 million heading into 17-19. Well, what does any good budget manager do when you're looking at a budget gap? You start thinking of alternatives, options to basically maintain current services and reduce the size of the problem. And we've identified at least three major areas that we can basically budget more aggressively, change some of our accounting practices, and reduce that problem statement without, we hope, having much of an effect on our customer base or the resources that we protect. The first bullet there is to institute program proportionate administrative funding. I know that's a bit of a mouthful. We've already instituted that in our business services program as from legislative direction in the budget a couple of years ago. This would be to be bringing programs into the fold. And simply what this is it's just making sure that each one of our dedicated and restricted accounts is paying their fair share of administrative costs. We believe that would free up about $2 million in our flexible state funding. Estimated variance in flexible funds, that's basically savings. We're going to do the best that we can to delay equipment costs, potentially hold vacancies, those types of things. I think if we aggressively, actively manage our budget, we can maybe come in about $4 to $6 million underspent to our authority. And then additionally, we've got quite a bit of wildlife authority that's basically just debt authority that's not backed by revenue on that non-restricted side. We do have some balances we could potentially take advantage of in 17-19 in the restricted Discover Pass, Puget Sound Crab, perhaps the duck stamp and transaction fees. So we might be able to mitigate some of the budget problem with the use of some of those dedicated accounts.
So the first one, program proportionate administrative funding. Gain $2 million, but what about the programs that are paying it?
Yeah, but basically it would be a shift to other fund sources to free up flexible dollars so that it would, it should be a net, no net gain or loss to the programs. It's just a shift in how we spend. So we think we can get that budget.
Well,
sorry, go ahead.
Having done both programs and administration and government, I'm not sure I entirely agree with that, but
okay.
Hopefully.
Okay. So basically what we would do is we would a lot of our admin functions are funded a little bit high on the general fund side and on some of our non-restricted wildlife. So we can identify the many fund sources that we manage of about 50, where we could shift some of those administrative requirements to those accounts and maintain that current level of administration by just shifting to other fund sources while freeing up some of the shortfall, the areas that we've got a budget shortfall in. So it shouldn't result in any noticeable change to program budget capacity, at least in the short term.
I guess my concern is this is sometimes more flexible than other funding sources that are restrictive, and that creates problems for program management.
Okay.
There's no free lunch.
I understand.
I'll go to number two, I guess. Estimated variance in flexible funds. You talk about delayed purchases and things like that. Is that that's a slippery slope? Now, how are you going to do? Who's going to do that? And is it a group decision or is it a director's decision? You know, my budget and my business when I was still operational was certainly smaller than this, but there's only so many ways you can cut a dollar. And I just want to know what your strategy is to truly create those savings that you so desperately need right now.
Well, we're going to be looking in on just about under every rock to see what we can do to save money. We did have some variances toward the end of the biennium related to the fact that it's been difficult, for instance, for us to retain IT staff in some regards because we're not as competitive as we can be with the private marketplace. You know, it's a relatively large size agency, and I do believe we can find some efficiencies to help close that budget gap.
On that one a little bit too. I mean, it's essentially belt tightening. We're going to some in the past at times the programs had looked at fund balances towards the end of the biennium as a time to purchase equipment, as a time to take on big costs that have been sitting out there. So we're going to dedicate those dollars now towards the problem statement, and they won't have that capacity. So there are impacts. We're thinking about a soft hiring freeze, you know, where we would hold vacancies open that we might have filled in a month. We would hold them open for 3 or 4 months. You know, so it's that kind of thing. We're going to be just tightening, and these numbers are just estimates. We're not certain on that 4 to 6 million. I think we can get close to that, but you know, everywhere we can hold back a dollar and have planning occur ahead of time versus just opportunistically purchasing, we're gonna do that.
So as you know, part of the commission's role is to set policy for the agency as well as to authorize the budget requests that are moving forward as well as our legislative requests. That's under RCW 7704.055. Supplemental sessions are different from the long 105-day sessions that begin in odd years. Supplemental sessions are much shorter. They're 60 days rather than 105. They have fairly strict guidelines for state agencies. Both legislative and budget requests should be limited to emergent issues, technical requirements, or technical fixes and legal requirements in recognition that the legislature's basically set policy for the state for the next 2 years. So here's our proposal development timeline. We began even before June trying to identify areas that we were going to be challenged in a budget standpoint, probably in mid to late May. We began a ranking process similar to what's used in the capital budget request process for both the operating and for legislative proposals. We gathered together a small work group from folks from the different programs and tried to develop matrices to help us inform decisions on the packages that are going to basically have the most bang for the buck. I think we had some success with that this year. It's a little more challenging to do that on the operating budget side because the projects aren't quite as concrete as they are in the capital budget. But I think we had some success with that, and there's some. We'll get into a little bit about how we looked at that this summer. Held a commission conference call a couple of weeks ago, talked a little bit about the budget shortfall, talked about some of the packages that we're bringing forward. I'll be covering that, the budget portion, and Nate will cover the legislative portion. And then Raquel and I tried to connect with as many of you as possible ahead of this meeting just to give you a heads up on the types of things that we'd be looking to push forward for the 2008 legislative session. Today, we're looking for your review and potentially approval, if you're ready, to move both legislative and budget packages forward. And then our ledge packages are due to the governor's office and to the legislature, or OFM and the governor's office, on September 18th. And October 6th is the due date for budget proposals to go to OFM and the legislative committees. Here's a matrix of what we developed to kind of evaluate our operating budget requests. Three main areas will be very familiar to you: our mission, and that was composed of both our conservation mandate as well as a consideration for our recreational and commercial opportunities that we support, and also agency efficiency and operational effectiveness, which you'll see in our strategic plan. External context, obviously, how are these proposals going to be received externally? Really need to focus on that as much as possible. So we're looking at what we think the legislature, the governor, how they might respond, stakeholder support, and benefits to state and local economies. And then a big portion of a supplemental year, again, is this idea of risk or how timely is it? Are there legal issues that have come forward? Again, that's a big component because supplemental sessions are kind of about addressing emergent issues and emergencies. So here are the recommended operating budget supplemental packages. Our maintenance proposals are what we need to maintain our current workload or to meet technical corrections. As you're aware, Initiative 1433 passed last November's general election, increased the state's minimum wage in steps to $12 an hour by the end of the current biennium. We engaged with labor service contractors for our mass marking work, where we have folks that are clipping all adipose fins from the millions of Chinook and Coho smolts that we are raising at our hatcheries. And those hatchery fish have to be clipped before they're released. And so we're looking to meet the increased costs for these labor contracts so that we can maintain the current level of mass marking. The off-road vehicle account is an account that's funded by a gas tax refund, a general gas tax refund, in recognition that not all vehicle miles are traveled on state roads or highways, and these funds are intended to be used for recreational purposes. There's percentages that are set in statute for the amount that Fish and Wildlife, DNR, and some other agencies are to receive to support recreational opportunities across the state. We are currently out of alignment with the amount that should be appropriated as per the RCW, and so we'll be asking to align the legal requirements with the appropriation authority in the budget. Our network infrastructure is aging. We've had some failures out at the regions, even at headquarters. Traffic has increased fivefold in the past 5 years. Not surprisingly, IT has become a greater and greater portion of our lives, information technology. And so we're looking to make an investment in that infrastructure so that we can continue to maintain our IT footing. And then we've got a placeholder for wildfire season costs. These are costs that we would pay to the Department of Natural Resources for fighting fires, and also potentially some restoration costs if it comes to that, to be able to restore the landscape so that we can keep non-native weeds and maintain the ecological integrity of our wildlife areas. Hoping we don't need to use that this year. Performance proposals are basically new work.
You skipped the operating costs.
Oh, excuse me. Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. So operating costs for new wildlife lands. So often we receive new lands through capital budget appropriations or through RCO grants, and all receiving agencies have to report what the O&M, or the operation and maintenance, is on those lands when they apply for capital funds through either a direct appropriation or through RCO. And so after we acquire these lands, we then need to maintain them. And so we're looking for some additional funding to be able to support the operation and maintenance on any of those lands that have been purchased since the last time we had an adjustment in this area.
Can I just ask a question? Mm-hmm. So is this considered an emergent issue because of the timing of the acquisition?
It's an emergent issue in that we've got a much better idea of, it would be even more emergent had we haven't had a capital budget. We've definitely got a catalog of new lands that we have not requested some O&M for since the last time, which was, I believe, several years ago. Again, and this should also help to stem some of that budget gap we've been talking about as well. As for our performance proposals, these are proposals for new work. Our enforcement computer-aided dispatch system is a system all of our state wildlife enforcement officers rely on to connect to criminal justice information systems, as well as to communicate with each other in the field. And the current system is about 10 years old. The contract expires at the end of this calendar year, and we've recently had a finding by both the state auditor and the Office of Cybersecurity that system is vulnerable to hacking and to potential loss of private data that's in those systems, as well as it could affect their abilities for the ability of our officers to connect to each other in the field. So that's a primary concern, and we'll be looking to see if we can replace that system this biennium. Puget Sound Early Marine Survival is all about Puget Sound Steelhead. Excuse me. Over the past couple of biennium, we've been working with tribes, nonprofits, other state agencies to try to assess why we have such a high mortality rate of steelhead as they enter Puget Sound from their natal streams. In some cases, there's only about a 10% survival rate. We're looking to build upon what we've learned over the past 4 years, put some of those management ideas into place to test them to see if they work. We're looking to try to phase this or to fund this work this biennium. It should be the third phase and final phase of that investigation. Fish health and disease, we've got new state and federal requirements in regards to how much oversight our hatcheries have from veterinarians and their prescription of medicated fish food, as well as other protocols. We need to be able to maintain the health of fish in our hatcheries. Because of these new legal requirements, we're going to need an additional veterinarian and a portion of an epidemiologist to be able to meet those new requirements. And then finally, timber revenue for forest health is a package you all approved in the 17 supplemental. We're looking to continue that work, basically pulling some of doing it while working on some of the forest practice work in our on our wildlife areas, pulling off, thinning out timber stands, and pulling out overgrowth. That that material is worth money. And following kind of how DNR does business, we're looking to turn that into a profit, which we could then reinvest in our wildlife areas to continue to advance more forest health practices and better stewardship of our lands. So that's what we've got in queue so far for your review this session from an operating budget standpoint.
Will Slade. Questions? So do you want to go ahead with the first motion on that? Or?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. Well, I'm going to make a motion because I have a lot of faith in staff, and you two guys rise to the top, so... We're going to bet on the come here and get this done right, huh? So I move to approve the 2018 Supplemental Agency Request Operating Budget Proposals as presented.
Motion's been made. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second's been made. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you.
Secondly, I move to approve the 2000...
You got
it. Oh, I'm sorry.
Presentation first.
Yeah. but that is a strong vote of confidence. So
I'm ahead of myself. I apologize. It's never happened before.
He's worried about paying for donuts tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, I got to go to the Thriftway.
So I'd like to present on two bills that we're seeking your approval to advance to the OFM and to the legislature. Similar to what Owen described for the operating budget, the agency went through a ranking process for our submittals. And because this year we only had two proposals and it is a supplemental session, this wasn't a real challenge. But I'd like to just call out that I think having the agency adopt this ranking criteria is a really good move to do that scorecard and assess how well does the proposal fit our mission, how well do we have external stakeholder support, what are the risks and challenges for not proceeding, and have that inform our decision. So just wanted to introduce that. The first bill has to do with some statute. Oh, excuse me.
Back up, there was one I didn't quite understand. At the very bottom down there, support results, WA.
So...
I'm not following what that is.
So the Results Washington is a governor's initiative for performance management. And so this would just be to see how well does this legislative proposal help us achieve the governor's direction. So the first bill I'd like to walk you through is some streamlining of statutes associated with ADA. What we're looking at doing is essentially asking the legislature to provide the commission the authority to develop those rules that establish the eligibility criteria for persons with disabilities. It also allows us to develop rules to outline the conduct of persons that are assisting persons with disabilities. And finally, we're repealing a couple statutes. One in particular has a reference for the medical approval for essentially certifying that a person meets a disability designation. It's set right now as a medical doctor, and certainly our ARNPs and physician's assistants have that ability. And so we're just going to be in alignment with other statutes. This particular package was included and approved by the commission last fall. It was embedded within our recreation fee bill when we worked with OFM and ultimately advanced the recreation fee bill. These particular elements didn't weren't consistent with the title of that bill, and so we ended up pulling them last December. So here we'll bring it forward. We're proposing to bring it forward as a standalone bill.
I can say that this week I had conversations with two folks up in Region 4 that this would help a great deal on that. So.
And just having some of the accommodations outlined in rule, where once we establish that someone has a disability designation and then set up the criteria to issue special use permits that are tailored to their individual needs, we can be a little bit nimble, as you know, with rulemaking and as new technology or new advancements to provide accommodations, then we can incorporate those in rule and not necessarily have it go through a legislative timeline.
And I mentioned when we had our conversation with Raquel to get the advisory group to the commission, the ADA advisory group, to support this. It would be engaging for them, and I think it would be beneficial. And that's one of the roles of that advisory body.
And I'm not sure the dialogue that has occurred on this spring with that group, but they were certainly involved in writing and vetting this when we brought this forward.
Yeah.
I mean, it was even back in like 2015 and 2016. So
right.
It's good that we're trying to advance it now.
I was just thinking in terms of a letter of support.
Okay.
With those signatures on that letterhead would be...
Well, and there are a lot of new members.
Yeah, there's a lot of new members, yeah.
They need to be informed.
And that's part of engaging our public,
yeah.
You know, that they would, it would help the new members understand what they're doing, and I think also, you know, understand the importance of their roles in that advisory body.
Thank you. Moving to the second bill with a broader title called Increasing Fishing and Hunting Participation, and it basically covers four items. The first is to align the definition of youth to under 16 for both hunting and fishing. Hunting currently is youth license is for those under 16. Fishing, youth is for folks under 15 don't need a license. 15-year-olds get a youth discount, and if you're 16 and above, you have to purchase the adult license. So essentially what we're doing is taking away the requirement for a 15-year-old to have to buy a discounted youth license. And I think this goes back to merger days and some language that we can attempt to clean up and promote youth opportunities. The second element was also in the recreation bill last year, which is to provide a $20 discount to those graduates of the hunter education class when they purchase their first hunting license. About 13,000 students are graduated through Washington's hunter ed program each year. About 4,000 actually buy a license that first year. And if they don't buy it the first year, it starts kind of really declining the chances that they'll actually buy a license in out year two or out year three. So in this instance, we're just trying to provide that extra incentive that while you've taken the class, while the material's fresh, get out and hunt that first season, and we can try to offer a discount to incentivize that. The third item is also was in the rec fee bill, and this is just trying to clarify the department's ability to bundle license packages and be able to explore different items such as multi-year license packages or a Fish Washington or a Hunt Washington sportsman's packages, but also be able to delegate the authority to the director to offer promotional pricing on licenses. So, for instance, I'm going to just make up a scenario here, but if tuna fishing is really strong and folks have a freshwater license, maybe there's something that we say, hey, upgrade to a combo license and you can buy your upgrade at a discounted price, take advantage of that saltwater season while it's hot. Those are the types of things that we're looking at and just try to generate a little bit of buzz. The last item in this bill is to remove the restriction that prohibits the use of temporary combo fishing licenses to be eligible for participating in the first 8 days of the Lowland Lakes Trout Opener. This was brought up, this was a long-standing statute. I think it was derived trying to capture the revenue, because there may have been folks that only participated in that Lowland Lakes Trout Opener and didn't come fishing again. So it was like, hey, it's a premier opportunity. Hatchery fish had just been released. Let's make sure we recoup full revenue. And in further consideration of this, it's kind of like, no, we just want people to get out fishing. And certainly there's some confusion out there, because there's other areas of the state and other fisheries where temporary combination licenses are needed and eligible during that same time period. So it's not something like we could turn off in our licensing system. We need to make it available. And so someone buys a temporary license, goes fishing, thinks they're legal, and finds out, No, they're not, because of this pretty abstract rule or abstract statute. So this is one that we were looking at removing. We looked at the pros and cons of what this might mean for revenue. You know, it could affect customer behavior in a couple different ways. Yes, maybe there are individuals that'll just buy the temporary license, fish that opening weekend, and not go fishing again. But then, alternatively, maybe this is just enough to kind of get them excited, and they'll come back and fish again and again. So a good opportunity here. We've worked through enforcement and fish program, and folks were pretty excited about this. And I know the director's office brought this forward. So those are the two bills. Just ask if there's any questions.
Nate, Owen. I don't know if you got the message, but I heard from a constituent about 2 months ago that, and who was inquiring about his son, who's just turned 16, wanted to engage in a youth moose hunt, no longer eligible, worried that he was going to lose all the points that he'd acquired over the years. So he was just, I think you talked with him too. He was from Pacific County. So I started thinking about this age dividing line that we have of 16, and particularly in light of the fact that we are looking at a downward trend in hunting. We're looking at a trend in which youth are not going outdoors as much as in the past. So the whole recruitment problem is front and center. So it led me to think about whether we shouldn't be raising the youth dividing line to 18, given that most kids, I think of 16, 17, 18-year-olds as kids, and there's still, many of them are still at home, they don't have jobs, so shouldn't we be moving the whole youth definition upward a bit? And I know that that would have near-term consequences that we wouldn't like, but in the longer term, wouldn't that be an incentive? So I just wanted to put that out for thought, that it's hard, it's very hard to get youth outdoors. We know that that's a problem. The money barrier, shouldn't we be reducing it?
And that raises a question, and I probably don't know this off the top of your head, but other states, is 16 it, or are some states 18? Or?
Well, I don't have those fun facts at the ready, but it's just something we could pull together and bring back to you.
I think that would be of value, because if we're an outlier, then it reinforces the point. But if 49 states are 16, maybe that's, that says something. But I don't, and that's an awful question too. They would know.
It's a variety, and even our neighbors have a big variety. But we can bring you back that information. I know it's been assembled because there's a big push nationwide to do things for retention recruitment.
Right. So that's good points.
And what about the points? Do the points carry forward that youth
Points stay within. Commissioner Wecker is asking about the special hunt opportunity points, and those points stay within the category. And so, yes, a youth points would not be able to carry forward once they reach the adult status. They stay within that bin, but they will essentially never be able to be tapped.
Because they wouldn't be eligible for the youth hunt, but if it were, but it doesn't go into a adult moose hunt category?
That is correct. As currently, it does not.
So that's another thing to consider. We're looking for ways to incentivize.
And that would be something that would be within the commission's rulemaking authority versus a statutory requirement.
Yeah. Any other thoughts? Are you ready for the motion now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to approve the 2018 agency request legislative proposals as presented.
Motion's been made. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second's been made. Further discussion? Let me just add, I think when we talked about marketing before, that needs to be marketed, all of it, because those are good things, you know, and we got to let the public know. So I would encourage Mr. Botka to work on that. So. Okay. Any other further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. There you go. Two for two, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Nate, before you run on, I'm back to Miranda's point with the youth.
And I have never turned in for a moose permit, but is there a big juvenile or an underage pool? Why do the kids lose their points?
So there's, as you know, there's different categories for the different special hunts.
Right.
So, for instance, there's 65 and over, there's quality bull, antlerless, bull elk, et cetera.
Right.
There is a youth category. So it's simply a matter of being able to eligible to apply for those permits. And then once they reach 16, they can no longer continue to apply. There is some items in rule about when your birthday. So you might be under 16 when you apply, you turn 16, and you're still able to purchase the license at the youth level. The other aspect is on the once-in-a-lifetime species for moose, sheep, and goat. Folks can apply for those permits across the board without buying a hunting license yet. So there are some individuals that are buying licenses for their two-year-old, anticipating that, you know, by the time they're 12, they'll have 10 points racked up and be very competitive in that, oftentimes, those antlerless moose opportunities in the youth category. So that is an item that the wildlife program, I know, is bringing forward as part of the three-year package. So you'll be seeing that item in March and April of 2018.
I guess where I'm coming back to is, like in my part of the world, on big bull rifle tags. I mean, truly, you need to be in the 18-point bracket before you stand much of a chance of drawing one. And for the kids growing up around there, and I don't know if there, I'm positive there isn't a juvenile that you just turn into a normal pool on a deal like that. I guess since there isn't a distinction down in our part of the world with juvenile adults, it's all just a straight draw, so they wouldn't lose them. I'm just trying to get my head wrapped around it. Since there wouldn't be, like in the Blue Mountains, there isn't a distinct juvenile draw,
okay. So
they would just carry on. They wouldn't be starting out from scratch.
It sounds like that. I can't remember how many, where the youth permit opportunities are spread across the state.
Yeah, okay.
So I guess I can see your point where it's a unique hunting opportunity that stands alone. And then when they go into the adult, then that's one thing. But, okay.
But I think, you know, having the commission, something we could bring back is to look at what that might mean for youth permits to be able to roll forward into another category. I can picture some logistical challenges on the licensing side of things, but I can also picture some really good, strong public and goodwill aspects of that concept.
Yeah.
When you're talking about this proposed bill, you were discussing signature authority. But as you look at the bill, there's also a couple of repealers in there, and I'm just wondering if I'm reading it wrong. Are we also in this bill giving people with disabilities or that have under the ADA authority to hunt from a vehicle? Or is that something that we're going to be looking at more? Because I would have a few questions about what that means.
Great. That's an excellent question. Thank you, Commissioner Baker. Currently, an individual that receives a disability status right now also receives an orange placard that would essentially indicate that this is a disabled hunter in the vehicle and could potentially shoot from the roadway. This has probably been one of the areas that we hear most concern from enforcement about people taking advantage of that opportunity. And so what we're looking at here is essentially making sure that individuals, yes, once they have the disability designation, but if someone has a disability that would require them to, for them to be able to hunt, need an accommodation to remain in their vehicle, or they couldn't move out away from their vehicle, then we would have a special use permit that would allow for that. So it wouldn't just be everybody. It would be for those individuals that need this special use permit. So I think that would be a benefit. This is something that we visited with the Attorney General's office this spring, saw the existing language, and saw that, hey, this is actually something we could probably try to fix within rule. And so that would be another item that you'll see in this in the three-year package. For this winter. This particular statute amendment will bring all of our ADA statutes in alignment in terms of what we're calling the disability designation.
Okay, so we will revisit that little side question later, I think is what
Yes, that's correct, Commissioner.
Okay, that's fine.
Did we vote?
Yes.
We're done.
Oh,
yep, we did.
Okay. Just a couple comments. You'll see that some of this legislation, it looks like simplification. That's what it is. The Fish Committee yesterday got a briefing on some of the work that the program, Fish Program, has been doing on regulation and rules simplification. It's something that has been a pet project of mine since the first weekend I got here and went fishing. And anyway, I'm pretty excited that we're going to have some significant improvements in our rules. They're never going to be simple, because we divide the pie in too many tiny slices, but they are going to be simpler, and I'm really excited about that. I'm also excited to say that we're making some real progress on the phone app rules, and it's really coming along and looking nice. I'm a beta tester, and it's getting pretty neat. So all of this is... We're headed in this direction to try to simplify, and it really all comes down to trying to make hunting and fishing more attractive to people as a recreation. There's something wrong with having, like, for example, in the Capitol Lake, a body of water where a kid can't ride his bike to and go fishing. And I realize there's other problems there, but every town in Washington, you ought to have a place for a kid to go dunk a worm. So,
indeed.
Anyway, we'll keep working on it.
You're here.
Anything else?
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.